All Elite Podcast. Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
Wait a minute. Sean Spears? Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
One, two, three, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Aftershock. I'm your host, Zach Perez, at Spots High on Twitter, and I'm sorry for the delay this week. I've had some things come up with my migraines, been trying to take care of that, but regardless of all of that, I'm here back with you guys to discuss this week's AEW Dynamite that happened on the 12th of February here, and it was an amazing show. I think that it really was top-class AEW, you know, in full effect. You had the amazing matchup to start the night and some interesting storylines being built, some characters interacting that you might not have expected to have the type of good back and forth they had, but I'm getting ahead of myself here, so let's go ahead and we'll dive right into it this week with the opening match being Hangman Page and Kenny Omega taking on SCU. This was, of course, their championship rematch after they lost the belts to Omega and Hangman at the Jericho Cruise. So this was their first real chance of getting a redemption, getting back at their titles and getting a shot at the two who took it from them. So this was just instant classic right off the bat, really kicked off the show with some firepower and interesting storylines going on in the background that I'll touch on at the end of the match. But, you know, just, I loved the tease and the ring psychology of having, you know, Scorpio Sky get frustrated and start to play a little bit dirty, kicking Omega in the back as he bounced off the ropes. And, you had some of just this grit and grind to this matchup that made it feel like it was actually for a title. It didn't feel like it was a friendly contest between two teams. It was much more of a really grinded out contest, which ended up having Omega and Page take the victory. It made a lot of sense. I like the fact that they didn't just abandon the championships back over and kind of hot shot them back and forth just for the sake of doing this Page lone wolf storyline that they've been having going on. So I love the chemistry between Page and Omega. I think it's been a real shocker how good they've come and been so cohesive in their short time together here. And I love that finisher here with the buckshot lariat to V-trigger. It just looked like somebody was getting laid out. It looked like somebody was going to be unconscious after taking one of those. So it definitely was sold brilliantly, and it just looked perfect. And I think that all in all, that this going forward is a great team to have with the belts right now. You have the great storyline behind it of when is Paige going to turn, or when is he going to abandon them, or maybe it's Omega that abandons Paige for his actions. Whatever it ends up being, there's some intrigue to every time that you see this team on television. So it instantly puts over the match, and it makes it a little bit more interesting with what's going on in the background. And speaking of what was going on in the background here, we had the Dark Order getting involved once again. Before the match, they issued a warning, and what was very interesting about that was the fact that Christopher Daniels was the one who went to the back, but at the end, when we had the huge brawl between the Dark Order, Jack Evans and Angelico, Butcher and the Blade, all coming down to the ring and being this big heel mob to come after everybody, I thought that at some point that you would see Christopher Daniels emerge, but he didn't. So we'll have to see if that gets touched upon, if they go into that with any more detail. But it was an interesting little tidbit to take from this. And as we continue taking guesses for who the Exalted One is, I think that that's going to be a very interesting potential leader for the Dark Order. And I have a couple different theories of who it might be. I might even write up an article about this at some point, but I have a few different theories who could possibly be it. And, you know, with people jumping ship from other companies and so many options of who it could be and who I would want it to be, you know, I would love to see perhaps Danhausen get a shot as the leader. That would be a very cool nod to independent wrestling, but that might be a little bit too insider, but anyway, you know, this matchup had a little bit of everything. The brawl at the end really sold it together fully and made this feel like a very AEW opener for sure, with the mixture of hot tag team action mixed with the, you know, intensity of the brawl. And it just felt very much like their style of television that they've kind of crafted out since October. So I loved the start, and it led into a great match also between Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara. Very simple, you know, made Dustin look much stronger than he has in recent memory, coming off of his arm being broken by Sammy and Jake Hager. So I love the fact that he basically just came in and whooped some ass because he wanted to get some revenge, and I thought it was very simple. I don't think that it was a big deal that Sammy lost here, because I think that really he can absorb some losses. He's on a bit of a hot streak after joining the Inner Circle. He's got that niche inside of the group that he fits in so perfectly. So I think that he'll just continue to go upward trajectory from here. So I think giving Dustin a good singles victory over a bigger name like that was the smart move to go with here. And it led into the back and forth between him and Jake Hager, setting up a potential match at Revolution now, you know, just challenging him and calling him Jericho's bitch. And I love the comfortability that Dustin had both in the ring and on the mic here. He felt like a more complete wrestler than we've seen him be in a long time. And I love the fact that, you know, he's hitting crazy moves like his Canadian Destroyer that he loves to hit now. And, you know, I just love his style in the ring. I loved his style on the mic of being no nonsense for one of the first times in his career. You know, it's an interesting dynamic to go back from watching him be Goldust for so many years and then seeing him just be himself in the ring again, you know, for the first time since, I think, WCW was the last time that he actually was, you know, just Dustin Rhodes in the ring. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember him ever being presented as that in the WWE. So seeing him just be a big, burly ass kicker inside of AEW has been a welcome transformation and a good sort of send off towards the end of his career here. But moving right along here, we did have next up Britt Baker coming out to continue her heel transition and you know, just basically saying that her attack on Yuka Sakazaki was for medical purposes. I thought it was a entertaining little bit where she went off on some very dental lingo tangent where it was very clearly meant to not be understood and make her look like kind of a uppity jackass, and I loved it. I thought it was very, very smart, very arrogant, and well put together, and I think that this is really exactly what Britt Baker's character needed, and I think that this will keep her busy away from the title picture for a while, which we did end up seeing in the next matchup, a little bit of a shakeup. So let's just dive right into that, which was the Riho versus Nyla Rose match, which I think for my money is probably the second or third best women's match I've seen in all of AEW. It definitely had the most meaning behind it, and I think that this topped their previous contest, which was also great, that saw Riho take the victory. And I think that this was a very smart passing of the torch. I think that Riho did have a bit of a weak title run with the belt, so seeing her take the loss here and lose the title was a little bit premature feeling, but at the same time, looking back after my initial reaction, it really does feel like the right time to pull the trigger. Nyla is really on a bit of a tear and looking very dominant. To have her take another loss to someone the size of Riho would feel a little bit weird, a little bit off-putting for her character, and give it kind of the Braun Strowman syndrome of not ever really making a difference when it comes to the title picture in claiming to be a monster. So I think that it made all the sense in the world to go with it here. They both put on a fantastic contest. One of the biggest spots was, you know, Riho running across the table and hitting the drop kick. I think that stuck out in everybody's mind. You know, her hitting Snapdragon suplexes and trying for, you know, the one-winged angel and just the fight and determination that she had throughout the match and, you know, kicking out of a Avalanche Death Valley driver. And it just was a great back and forth match that you really were sold on the finish a matter of, you know, a few times, and it just felt like Riho never would die until finally she did end up taking the new Nyla Rose finisher, which is the Beast Bomb, you know, the one that she's been putting people through tables with. And I think that it sold her new finisher well and made her look dominant, and she really looks like a strong champion heading into this. So I think that probably if they were going to invest in Nyla, she should have won the title initially and just been winning these matches, you know, as title matches to really sell the character. But I understand why they went with Riho right off the bat. Hopefully they'll transition her towards something more meaningful, like a you know, intergender tag situation with Kenny Omega. Maybe that's how he kind of abandons Paige. We'll have to see where that all lies in a matter of weeks here. But I think that it was the right time, and I think that this match was definitely one of the best in AEW history in terms of the women's division, and was a strong way to transition champion. So I have nothing but good things to say about it, and it's well worth the watch if you haven't seen it already. You know, now that it's already almost time for Dynamite again this week. But anyway, we'll jump next into the Jungle Boy versus MJF match, which, you know, was a great timed match. Brought in MJF off of his 10 lashings that he gave to Cody last week, which were brilliantly brutal, as I would like to call it. And I thought that this was a nice back and forth contest. You know, obviously Jungle Boy wasn't going to be taking the victory here, you know, but they did a good job of making it more about the situation, you know, the having Wardlow at ringside and having him get involved, and just using all of that as the reason for the victory made a lot more sense to me than actually, you know, just having him dominate the match and, you know, end up with a loss or something like that. So I think that it just was a smart way of having them both go back and forth and have Jungle Boy still look strong while also putting MJF over leading into the Revolution pay-per-view. So I think we'll see probably another match with MJF, probably coinciding with the match that Cody's going to have against Wardlow in the steel cage. I think that's next week, or this upcoming week rather. So we'll have to see where this all goes. But I think that Jungle Boy has really had a tremendous transformation from beginning to end here in terms of where we are now. I think that his in-ring ability has skyrocketed from the time that he first hit an AEW ring, and I think that he has a very promising future. I'd love to see some sort of X Division title, you know, a sort of gateway title like that, like they had in Impact, where it's more focused on some of the smaller guys, but still, you know, having some of the larger guys get involved, you know, not a necessary cruiserweight, but something a little bit more open and free with who can be champion. I think Jungle Boy would be very well suited for those type of matches, because he seems to put on great matches with a large variety of AEW's talent. So I think this was a nice spectacle of that, and I think that, you know, even more so than MJF playing the heel perfectly as he always does, I think Jungle Boy playing the face and the underdog in this matchup was played brilliantly too. So some great ring psychology from two wrestlers who are still quite young and still have a massive amount of potential for where they'll end up in AEW in the future. But speaking of which, we also had Santana versus Jon Moxley, which I can't get into this without mentioning the amazing promo that Santana had alongside Jim Ross, being interviewed by him leading into this matchup earlier in the contest. And, you know, he just so brilliantly sold everything that he was saying, and talked to him about his father, and really it felt like a very heartfelt interview. It felt very real. It didn't feel like it was just another scripted nonsense filler promo like a lot of times happens over in WWE, where it's just leading into the match. There's no real substance to gain off of it. This really made Santana feel like more of a real person, and made you really feel for his situation, even though he was the heel, which is a great way to play on, you know, making somebody popular while they're a heel. You know, you want that kind of complex. I mean, you look at when Jericho comes out, you know, the leader of the Inner Circle, people love to hate him, but at the same time, they're still singing along to his theme song, they're still, you know, laughing at his jokes, and they have that love for him beyond just the role of being a heel. They accept the fact that he is a fantastic heel, and it's knowing how to toe that line just so. And I think that this helped Santana guide more towards that, where he feels like a more complete character and is not just a evil henchman. He's somebody who actually has a story, a background, and is, you know, not just here to collect a paycheck alongside Chris Jericho. He has a lot more to him than that. And I think that showed inside of the ring as well, as you had Santana taking on his first singles contest in 500 plus days, I think the commentary team said there. So, you know, similar to Ortiz last week, who was in the same boat, I think that he really excelled in this situation and put himself over more as a legitimate competitor, taking Moxley to his limits. I love the way that they've been kind of throwing the henchmen at Moxley and making them actually kind of wear him down and feel like a real threat to him. I love the way that they've done that and towed the line of still making Moxley look like an absolute badass while still having a bit of a vulnerability to him that doesn't make him feel like a superhero like maybe a John Cena. You know, he's much more the anti-hero style of the Steve Austin, and I just love that sort of anti-hero vibe that he has about him, and it showed great in this matchup. It was very gritty. There's always a hardcore match feel to all of Moxley's matches, even when they're not. We had some brawling all around. Ended up having Santana and Ortiz attack Moxley on his way down to the ring, and just using that advantage as you would expect the heels to do, and then having Santana go on a bit of a spree and just going back and forth with him and, attacking the eye with, spitting alcohol into his eyes, and, just some really great action here, some great moves too. You saw some top rope action from both individuals, which was a bit of a shocker, especially in the context of a brawl, but it fit in so perfectly. I just felt like this was really a grudge match that was built in 1 week, which was a pretty amazing feat, and it made it much more impactful, especially having that interview with Jim Ross with Santana leading up to this. It just all felt so right, and we end up having Jeff Cobb next week be the sort of next obstacle in Moxley's way to Revolution, and I think that's a great way of debuting somebody as well, having them take on somebody as big as Moxley to come in there and be this sort of monster for hire. I love that dynamic, and I think that it suits him perfectly. I haven't personally seen a ton of his work just because of not seeing too much of New Japan as much as I would like to get caught up on it. There's just so much wrestling in North America right now. It's just kind of on the back burner for me, unfortunately. But I love the idea of having NJPW and AEW come together and be this cohesive unit and share some talent. I don't know the contract situation with Cobb, if he has expired or what's going on, but I like the idea of trading talent back and forth. Moxley feels like a huge star when he goes over to Japan and wrestles, so I think that you'll see a lot more of that crossover in the near future, hopefully, as they start to kind of put their pettiness to the side and work together a bit more to deliver some great products to North America, probably both for New Japan and for AEW, as they sort of toe the line into North America out of Japan as well. So, but I digress here. You know, we had Moxley being built as this badass who was tearing through the Inner Circle member by member. You know, after a very grueling contest, he hit the paradigm shift and sold that finisher once again as the world beater that it should be, especially coming from somebody like Moxley, who needs that sort of, you know, Stone Cold Stunner type of finisher that just, when it's hit, you're done and there's no coming back from it. And that just feels like a perfect move. I love the old school aspect of it being the DDT, very Raven-like in his delivery of the DDT, and I think it fits him perfect. I think there's probably a lot of influence from Raven in Jon Moxley, which I quite enjoy. Raven is one of my underrated favorites from the Attitude Era. I loved his runs with the hardcore title and, you know, all of that. But again, I'm jumping down a rabbit hole here, but I think that this week's Dynamite was very solid, a great build-up leading into Revolution, and I think that they're running on all cylinders right now. I mean, it just feels like they're head and shoulder the best wrestling product for me on television every week. The storylines feel real. They really feel like they have meaning. They reward you for keeping up and keeping in the loop and knowing what's happening and getting invested in the characters. They reward you for that feeling, and it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. You know, you might love NXT. I personally haven't been able to catch up on NXT, as much of a travesty as that is. I plan on trying to clean some of that up this week. Again, I definitely want to check out the takeover that just happened. I've heard nothing but phenomenal things about that. So you're spoiled for choice right now, which is a great way to be spoiled. And I hope that we continue to be more and more spoiled as wrestling fans as 2020 rolls on. But as 2020 rolls on, I have to roll on as well. So I'm going to say until next week, thank you all for listening. And as always, check out all of my writing over on Last Word on Pro Wrestling. You know, ProWrestlingPost.com. Sometimes over on WhatCulture.com as well. But always keep an eye on @SpotsHigh on Twitter for all updates on where you can hear my opinion, read my opinion, whatever it may be. But until next week, goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night. Goodbye and good night.